Welcome to this ICMA Sustainable Communities podcast. ICMA is the premier local government leadership and management organization. The ICMA Sustainable Communities Initiative strengthens local government's capacity to meet their sustainability goals. For more information, visit icma.org.
This is Tad McGalliard, and I'm the Director of Sustainability for ICMA, and I want to welcome those of you out there that have downloaded today's program. Our podcast is brought to you by ICMA's Center for Sustainable Communities, and we hope that you find the conversation informative and useful. Our special guest today is Jim Lay. Jim is the County Administrator of Sarasota County, Florida, and he has been a charter member of ICMA's efforts to create new resources for local government managers that are focused on the challenge of creating more sustainable communities. Jim, welcome, and thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here, Ted.
Jim, Sarasota County has made a real strong commitment to sustainability as a core component of your local government operations and has made a strong commitment to creating a more sustainable communities. If you could, maybe just talk a little bit about some of the drivers and some of the history behind Sarasota County's push to become a more sustainable place to live, work, and play.
Sure. I think the drivers are pretty straightforward. One of them, most importantly, I think, is that we, as administrators, managers, have a stewardship responsibility for our community. And the other is a more, I would say, straightforward, self-interested perspective, and that is that certain components that you would look at in sustainability, things like energy, cost money, and it's our job to manage our financial resources within the community as part of our stewardship responsibility, not just our environment and social fabric that are so often visible in our programs. My personal journey in a sustainability discussion probably started back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was a member of PTI's Urban Consortium Steering Committee, and we had a member on that committee named Harvey Reuven, who was with Miami-Dade County, a county commissioner, and he was all over this stuff. And I got to tell you then, it sounded like Chinese to most of us. But in the late 90s, as I took my county commission through a strategic planning process, and I had only been here like a year or two, we began to do the typical strategic planning. We began to identify our strategic focus areas, and we'd produced a nice list on the whiteboard. And it looked fine, and it felt good, and things were going along fine. But one of my department heads stepped up and said, "What if you thought of that list and organized it instead of a nice horizontal column as a wheel?" And we've been talking about operational excellence, and the wheel needs a roadbed to operate on. So the roadbed's operational excellence. And everybody sort of thought that metaphor was cool. But a wheel needs a hub or an axle or something to provide power to it. And one of my commissioners asked another commissioner, "How come the environment isn't up there as one of our strategic initiatives?" And he said, "Because it's everywhere." And right then it hit in my head. The hub of our strategic initiatives, the principles upon which we need to build our community, are the principles of sustainability, management of our environment and heritage, management of our social fabric, and stewardship of our financial responsibility. And so that literally, that metaphor of sustainability forming the hub and the driver and the principles that drive our strategic community building efforts, operating on the roadbed of operational excellence that we as administrators are supposed to apply, garnered huge ownership on the part of the county commission. In fact, about 3 years later, we tried to change some of the colors, just literally the colors, and a few of the words so they'd be more meaningful, and I had a commissioner come to me and say, "You can't do that. That's ours." And so that's one of those moments where you go, "Oh, my God, something you did. They got it. They owned it."
And they've taken very, very strong ownership of it. That's wonderful.
You bet.
Let me ask you something about energy. You mentioned power just a minute ago. Energy plays a very central role in your sustainability action planning, and you guys have won some nice accolades for the things that you've done. Talk just a little bit, if you would, about some of the things that you and folks in Sarasota County are doing to improve energy efficiency and conservation.
Sure. I think that I could talk about this from two perspectives, sort of the things we do, but also the position that we think we play. And I'll sort of elucidate those positions and come back to them after talking about some of the things we've done. I think that, and I strongly believe that it's our responsibility to provide leadership in any way we possibly can. So that's one of the roles we play, but also not just leadership, but facilitator and ultimately role model. And I think that's where some of the things we do come into play. Back in the early 2000s, we were building some buildings, and I began to ask the question about how we were building them. I'd built several large buildings in my career, and I decided that we would consider approaching the board and talking about building all of our buildings to at least LEED Gold. And they bought on to that, and not too long after that, we became the first county in the United States to adopt the American Institute of Architects 2030 challenge to become carbon neutral in all of our remodel and new buildings by that particular time. And that was a big, hairy goal, and it scared the board a little bit, and we postured it as a goal, not a directive. But that both was not only a role model example, it was a leadership example. Sarasota County now has the most public and private LEED certified buildings in the state of Florida, and possibly one as in one county in the United States. So it goes to show you how being a role model and exercising leadership can influence the private sector development as well. Early on in 2006, the county developed the roadmap to sustainability. Out of the strategic planning initiative that I talked about in the previous question, I formed an Office of Sustainability. It ostensibly reported to me, but it was a free-floating office. We have this concept called free-range chickens in our organization, meaning there are people who are basically allowed to roam around in the organization and peck away at anything they want. Well, the Office of Sustainability was sort of like that. It had no allegiance to any one program or any one function, and their job was basically to be a role model and to be just sort of an infectious virus on this particular set of topics. And out of the conversation, or out of about 4 years of their work, we realized we then needed to provide some structure. We had created a culture that had infected the entire organization, but now we had to provide a structure to it, a bit of a work program, and that's what the 2006 Roadmap to Sustainability is all about. And anybody that wants to see that can get on our website and just go to the search engine and type in roadmap, and that should be the first thing that comes up. The roadmap identified energy as a central area for change, and it recognized that reaching our destination required an organization-wide sort of cultural transition. So in 2008, we completed a greenhouse gas emissions inventory for all of our county operations and, frankly, for the community as a whole. And you can begin to see this role model, leadership, facilitator thing sort of overlapping here. And we provided a detailed analysis of the various sources of emissions and the concentrations of energy use and a database analysis of opportunities for reduction. So we look for the low-hanging fruit. An energy management action plan was also developed in 2008, and it set some specific goals for energy reduction, elevating the commitment to the highest level is in the organization and identifying specific policies and strategies that will help those goals. And then in parallel with that EMAP, the county launched an employee education and engagement campaign to ensure the users of energy that they are informed and that they're active participants in a reduction effort. So we spent a lot of time setting a internal leadership and cultural base that we knew was being watched by the community as a whole. you know, I mentioned before that one of the drivers was economic considerations, and these are tough times for everybody, and it didn't take long for us to realize that this whole carbon reduction or greenhouse gas reduction strategy was also a potential money saver. We knew we spent, in 2007, $13.7 million a year on energy costs, and we made a commitment that if we could cut just 20% out of that, that would save us nearly close to $3 million that we could use to offset other cuts. For an example, over the last couple of years, we've had to cut almost $20 million a year from our budget, a collective $40 million in 2 years. So anything we can do that results from our stewardship of energy and creates better stewardship of tax dollars, we thought was a great melding. And it fit right in there with that 2030 reduction, carbon reduction challenge as well. So you began to see a fabric being knitted together. In 2002, having created the sustainability office, we assigned one person in there to become an energy coordinator, and that person was just really assigned the responsibility to track opportunities for energy reduction. Ultimately, that person's work over a period of years and then working later with a team was the impetus for the creation of the Energy Management Action Plan. In 2005, as you mentioned, we got the Florida Energy Achievement Award presented by the Florida Solar Energy Center. In 2006, as I indicated, we developed our roadmap to sustainability and the like. We were in looking at all of this, obviously, we run a large transit system, so we looked at all of our fleet opportunities. We've compressed our fleet by about 30%, moved to biofuels, and we are currently in the process of reducing our building footprint by a significant amount, in excess of 20%, basically looking at how we plan and utilize space as a way of managing our energy use, but also as a way of managing our facilities as well. So you can see how this sort of one thing, this focus on energy, has led to benefits in other areas as well. So that's how we are as a role model. As a leader, we understand that how we plan and design our community has a significant impact on energy efficiency. So we're pushing, and I mean pushing at times, our board into conversations about smart growth, transit-oriented development. And we have a major bus rapid transit initiative of an evaluation underway right now. The leadership required to advance those type initiatives has required us to have some tough conversations with the BCC in the community, with our county commission in the community. And that's not always a comfortable thing for some people, but we've taken that on as part of our stewardship responsibility. We bring in expertise from outside, particularly in the land use and growth management area. In Florida, one-third of all carbon emissions are related to the use of vehicles. And the use of vehicles is very specifically influenced by the land use pattern we have. And while Florida has had a growth management law since 1985, the growing consensus is that law produced nothing more than maybe a little bit more organized sprawl, and that to have a more energy efficient future, we have to have a more energy efficient community form. And so as a result, we're going up against about 25 years of culture built through Florida's Growth Management Act that requires us to have these tough conversations. And personally, I've taken some heat for that, to be honest with you. We tell stories, we show examples, we engage the community, we present data, we've done things like write new codes, form-based codes for urban development. We've influenced marketing from time to time. And we create relationships and partnerships a lot through the facilitator role. We've tried to not take a regulator role, and I'll give you a couple of examples. We started something out of our solid waste department of all places, called the Green Energy, or excuse me, Green Partnership Program. And basically what we do is we go in and for free offer an audit to local businesses as to their green practices, whether it be recycling or energy utilization. And what they get out of that is a nice sticker, a recognition before the county commission, a sticker they can put on their doors. And it's grown in a couple years to have 107 business partners. And out of that, for example, grew the Use Local Food First program that we're beginning to see in a lot of our local restaurants, and sustainable fish, which we're beginning to see in a lot of our local restaurants. So it's sort of neat how you didn't have to use regulation at all. You just had to use culture building. We also worked with Florida Power and Light and allowed them access, and one of their partners access to one of our old landfill sites, and they built what at the time was the largest solar array in the state of Florida. And through that partnership, for example, FPL in turn outfitted four of our hybrid fleet to make them plug-in hybrids. So that, again, we're not only modeling, but we're gaining the benefit of conversion of fleet in that regard. Working with the National Renewable Energy Lab, we established the Plug-In Partners Program, and the idea of that was to be able to work with a developer and say, how would we develop an energy-neutral home through the use of a plug-in hybrid vehicle that not only would charge in off-peak times, but come home, plug into the wall, and either upload through net metering or into a specific appliance the stored-up kinetic energy of an automobile into an appliance or into the energy grid. And then from the sustainability point of view, in other initiatives, we've had things like our integrated pest management program that talks and uses the least toxic chemical approach to pest management. And in the last couple of years, we've adopted the first fertilizer regulation ordinance in the state of Florida, regulating how fertilizers could be applied to landscapes. But rather than the regulation being most important, the education was most important, and we developed a certification program and education program that's now being used throughout the state of Florida in that particular area. And I only mention those last two just to show you how this is an integrated or connected culture of stewardship that crosses boundaries sort of freely right now within this organization.
Let's stay on that topic a little bit, because earlier you talked about your board's buy-in, and if you look around Sarasota County, you guys have several thousand employees that work for you, and probably all of them are not ardent believers in sustainability. How do you keep them in the game? How do you keep them moving forward with this plan and this aggressive approach to making sustainability a priority for your organization?
Well, I think, in part, it starts with my perspective as a manager. I don't think I manage an organization. I think I manage outcomes. And to obtain outcomes, you have to have a common culture. So we spend a lot of time in this organization acculturating ourselves around things like trust. Let's get away from the sustainability or energy stuff for a bit, but around trust and about working toward a common mission. As I mentioned, I purposefully set up the sustainability program as a group of free-roaming chickens because I didn't want, and then began to message to the organization that it's everybody's responsibility, that this is one of those outcomes that we want for the community, that it's part of our, we use that metaphor of the wheel and the hub and the roadbed of operational excellence, that it's everybody's job to achieve community outcomes, and that this is at the heart of it. And I didn't want to create an office that it was in a department so everybody could go, oh, they're the sustainability people, we don't have to do anything. So that's why I used the metaphor of a virus. Their job was to go out and infect everybody and talk to everybody. It became a central part of my messaging because the board owned it as a part of their strategic initiatives. It became a central part of their messaging, out into the community as well. So I think it's taking the time to understand that as a manager or a leader, you have a role to influence, a way to influence, and a role that goes beyond the simple lines and boxes in an organization. And you do that through communication, by creating pictures that stick in people's minds, and by using your ability to manage, even manipulate the organization and the conversation in the organization to create the culture you want. And it's, you know, anybody can move the boxes around, and the movement is probably, and the results of that movement are probably as long-lasting as the person's tenure in their position. My goal has always been to do something meaningful that lasts beyond me, and I've always been taught that that only occurs if you spend the time and energy, as maddening it is, as it is, to deal with culture.
I have another question, and this sort of relates to the financial times that we seem to be living in right now. Unless you've been asleep like Rip Van Winkle for the last year, you know that local and state governments are really struggling. And this is kind of a two-part question that I wanted to ask you. One is, how do you see your sustainability efforts and your energy efficiency efforts holding up in these tight financial times? And then has the Recovery Act, for example, the billions that are going to local and state governments for energy conservation, has any of that sort of helped mitigate maybe some of the financial struggles that local governments are having with their sustainability program?
Sure. I think that because sustainability isn't a program, it's an ethic, it's not subject to being looked at as a program that might be subject to cuts, and in fact it's being seen by my board and by my organization as a way to help them manage through these tough times. For example, in our we all know in government, everybody says they don't want big government, but they always look to government to do things. And part of the ethic of sustainability is for people to be accountable for themselves, responsible for themselves, and understand what their influence is on the community. Well, in part, when we're looking to cut programs, part of our conversation back to the community is, if we can't do it for you, how will you do it yourself? So there's a linkage of those two discussions in some way or another. Just on the raw cost side, I talked a little bit about how our focus on energy is helping us, our focus on sustainability and subsequent focus on energy is helping us reduce costs in a way that that feed into the bottom line issues that we have to deal with in a productive fashion. So if we can reduce our energy costs, if we can reduce our building footprint, the energy costs $3 million, reduce our building footprint, which means we reduce, our maintenance needs, our janitorial needs, and our travel needs in some way or another, we're having an influence on that bottom line as well. So I think two lessons there. It's not a program, it's an ethic, and it's an ethic that helps us deal with these concerns. On the ARRA side, we got about $2.5 million allocated to us over 3 years. In fact, we just got the notice of that award on August 31st, and developed a plan for the board that said about three quarters of that money was going to go to community residential energy improvements, and a quarter of it would go to county energy improvements. So on the county internal side, we're putting about $300,000 of that money toward facility energy improvements, and we're putting about $43,000 of it toward facility energy audits, and about $285,000 of it toward retrofitting, toward energy-saving devices and the like. On the community side, and again, we try always not to focus internally. Our job's the community, and that's why three quarters of the money's out there. About $500,000 we're looking at putting into a revolving loan fund that people can come tap into and do things like put solar hot water heaters on their roof, and we provide a cash flow management vehicle for them in terms of the revolving loan fund, a rebate program that would help people or provide some rebates in terms of certain energy retrofits that we have defined specifically for certain low-income people. We're trying to reduce the cost of owning home ownership by reducing the cost of energy, therefore making our community more sustainable from an economic and a social point of view. And education and workforce training, there's a couple hundred thousand dollars. Again, trying to develop a workforce that is capable of working in this industry and therefore trying to set ourselves up to be more economically stable in the future. And then energy audits throughout the community, again, trying to make the community as a whole more energy efficient in everything they do. So that's just an example of how we're using those ARRA monies in tough times, not only to benefit ourselves financially in the difficult times we're in, but also to benefit our more importantly, to benefit our residents in the tough times that they're having to face.
Absolutely. Hey, just another question. You probably, and I know you do, have had many conversations with many local government managers around the country. You've been a very active member of our Sustainable Communities Advisory Committee. If you were talking with someone who was not nearly as advanced as you folks down in Sarasota County, and you could give them some advice, you've talked about creating sustainability as an ethic, what would you tell them about how to sort of create or replicate or develop a program on creating more sustainable communities?
Well, first of all, I'd start with the acknowledgement that, as I remember when I started this story, I said that when I first heard about this stuff in 1990, it sounded like somebody from Mars talking to me. So I can understand that. I'd say do what we did. You know, I have a philosophy that says no good idea should go unstolen.
Right.
And I'd tend to look around to other communities and see what they're doing. One of the things we hoped to do when we created the Roadmap to Sustainability was not only to provide a guide that other people might use, but also to provide a format that other people might say, have you thought of this idea? Have you thought of that idea? Have you thought of that idea? So look around and see what other people have on their websites. I think you need to really step back and understand this as a stewardship discussion, not as a management discussion. And that puts you more in touch with your leadership and culture building responsibilities. And I think you'll only get that by engaging yourselves in conversations with your peers who are doing this as well. I mean, you can learn it on your own, there's no doubt about it. But by engaging in conversation with your peers, hopefully listening to conversations like this helps. But also, you know, if you go to a conference and there's something on sustainability, go and listen. I think that was one of the purposes of ICMA creating the Sustainability Advisory Committee, is how do you create, in one part, how do you create that discussion opportunity where others can learn from shared experience. And second, understand that some of this stuff, particularly the growth management stuff, that's where the real community meat is on the tree, isn't easy. We've, since World War II, developed in this auto-oriented suburban pattern that has made us extremely dependent on foreign energy sources. And in conjunction with our debt situation in this country, we are now financially dependent on similar foreign sources. If we are, as public administrators, responsible for the preservation of a democratic fabric in this country, a fabric of democracy, in part it's our job to have the tough conversations that get us back in balance and living within our means. And that's going headlong into the face of a speeding train that doesn't know yet that the track is out at the gorge.
Right.
And it's up against a culture of consumerism, and you know, for example, as a person, I have a hard time believing in man-made influence on global warming, primarily because I was trained early in my years as a climatologist, and I understand the science maybe a little bit better than others. So I'm not a greenie that way or a crazy that way, but I do acknowledge that our need to satisfy all of our demands immediately in a way that puts us into debt to our environment or debt to our society or debt financially, in the long run, is not sustainable and jeopardizes what we are really the stewards of, and that's democracy. So getting in touch with that responsibility, too, that's sort of a high-level thing, and I go off on that one a bit, but that's probably our primary purpose in being public administrators.
Jim, this has been a very fascinating conversation for me, and I learned something new, that you were trained as a climatologist, which is something that I didn't know. We'll have to talk about that sometime offline.
Well, the math thing got in the way in the end.
I think it got in the way for a lot of us. Jim, just thank you again for taking the time to offer your insights on sustainability.
Thank you, Ted. I hope this was useful to everybody, and please visit our website or email us. We'll be glad to help.
You want to put in a plug for that website?
Yes, it's www.scgov.net, or I can be emailed at jlay, that's J-L-E-Y, at scgov.net.
Great. Again, our guest today has been Jim Lay. He's the county administrator for Sarasota County, Florida. Thanks again, Jim.
You bet. Thank you, Ted.
This has been an ICMA Sustainable Communities podcast. For more information about ICMA's Sustainable Communities Initiative, visit icma.org.